Hello, everybody. This is Jake Stenziano, host of Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, Mr. Gino Barbaro.
The Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast catalogs our journey to becoming financially free through multifamily real estate investing.
Gang, each week we interview a guest specifically chosen for their expertise in and around multifamily real estate.
We talk you through our entire process, every victory and every misstep and everything that we've learned along the way.
What does that look like? Buy right, manage right, and finance right.
The audio podcast is available wherever fine podcasts are found.
Or check us out on our YouTube page where you'll find tons of other great content.
Whose job is it really to bow out of the meeting? Is it the manager's job to stop inviting, or is it the salesperson's job to say, like, no, thank you?
You know, I think it's a fantastic question. It's really both. But I think it's key that the salesperson or the individual contributor, in whatever role you know that can be, really feel that they have the license, the authority, the courage, the sales balls, if you will, in your parlance.
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Pete Mikotas. Hi, everybody. This is Jeffrey Gittimer. Welcome to Sell or Die, the number one sales and personal development podcast on the planet. We are averaging 100,000 downloads a month, and the world is rocking. We're creating a network. We want you to be on it. But let me first introduce the lovely, the talented, the one, the only.
Jen Gluckow. Did you introduce yourself?
I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, King of sales. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, King of Sales.
I got
Well, hold on. All Jeffrey right, was right. trying to be a gentleman.
Right. And I finally get to go first.
No, here's the deal. I introduce you. Introduce me.
And to my left, we have the wonderful King of Sales, Mr. Jeffrey Gittimer himself.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sell or Die, where you're going to learn how to sell more, whether you like it or not.
Today, we have an amazing show. We have Pete Mikotas of How to Be Awesome podcast. He has his own show called How to Be Awesome. And when he's not recording, he's helping business leaders around the world with thinking strategy sessions. How freaking cool is that? What's a thinking strategy session? You'll have to keep listening to find out. But
before we get to Pete, I want to read a 5-star review.
All right, Jeffrey.
It's from T-Money 3000, and he or she writes, Jen is fantastic and motivates me to improve myself each and every week. Great to listen to. Oh, yeah, Jeffrey's okay, too. And that's the kind of listener that we're looking for. Somebody who's got a sense of humor, somebody who is a true diehard and listens every week. And T-Money 3000, we appreciate you. You can write your own 5-star review. You can get your weird name read on in front of 100,000 people on a regular basis.
And I really liked your review, T-Money, so thank you.
Yeah,
thank you. And guys, just leave us a 5-star review. We are very grateful for them. And
so it's January, and we're cranking. The phone's ringing. Yeah. People are hiring. People are spending money. Maybe it's the economy. Maybe it's us. But whatever it is, it's working.
I'm going to tell you something really woo, okay?
Yeah.
All right. So I read this.
Just one thing?
Just one thing, yeah. Right now. Okay.
Got it.
So I read this book recently called Dollars Flow Easily to Me, or Dollars Flow Easily to You. I forget which one it is. By Richard Dotts. And it changed my entire money mindset. Like everything that I didn't even realize was negative thinking around money. That like I really did not even think about it, right? It just was.
What
I was
could be
able
negative
to,
about money.
No. Like
no. I love
like,
money.
I know, but some people think money is really hard to come by, and that you have to like hustle and work your ass off in order to make money. And some people, not me, but some people think that money is bad, that rich people are greedy or rich people are bad or whatever. I don't know. There's all these money ideas out there, okay? And this book opened me up to how I grew up around money and what my thoughts were. And I saw my parents work, you know, 15-hour days. And I've always thought that's what you have to do to make money. And it's just made me think about money in a very different way. And the minute I started thinking about money differently, our sales have like quadrupled. It's so insanity. And I don't know if they're connected, but
they
I'm just putting it out there.
Let me give you a different take. I've never had making money a problem. I've just had keeping money a problem.
Well, I'm going to call you out on that. That is a limiting belief. The fact
it's not a limiting belief. I love spending.
I understand that. But the fact that you keep putting that out there and keep telling yourself that is limiting yourself.
Well, so far it's been working for 70 years.
Because it's telling yourself that as you spend it, you're just going to keep making it. As you make it, you're just going to keep spending it.
Now you're talking.
But you don't have to, okay? Oh. Like, we're getting married, so we're going to be more financially responsible.
Who's the we? Me and you. Oh, yeah.
I was about to say, y'all speaking French in here?
Oh, yeah. So, like, you know, we now have a shared sense of financial responsibility.
Don't worry about it. At the diehards, don't worry about anything. I'll be spending.
I'll be making sure he's saving, too.
Yeah.
Whether he likes it or not.
Jiminy Cricket will now be on my side.
Oh,
my conscience will be my guide. But the bottom line, you know.
Guys, send Jeffrey a personal email and tell him you can save some, okay, for a rainy day.
People take money too seriously. I was asked on an interview several years ago, Jeffrey, if you had $1 million, what would you do it? What would you do with it? And I said, well, I think I would buy I would buy 500,000 10-cent pens and then squander the rest. And the guy, like, he didn't know how to react. Like, it's not that serious to me. Money is only freedom. That's all money is. If you have enough of it, you have your freedom of time and freedom of things, places where you want to go, and freedom of things you want to do. But currently, I do what I love every day. I don't need freedom. I'm fine. I'm a writer. I'm a speaker.
What you're saying is you have freedom.
Oh, yeah. I totally gave it to myself. It was my present to myself.
Right.
When I wake up in the morning, I'm the happiest guy on the planet because I love what I do. Money notwithstanding.
Yeah. I mean, I like to make money. I'm not going to lie. I do. But this book, Dollars Flow Easily to Me, and I Make No Money If You Buy the Book. I just want you to know what book that I really liked.
Jen, I think you need to write that book as well. Dollars Flow Easily to Me and then Easily to a Shoe Store.
Oh, man.
That's three of them today. You are on fire.
Yeah, okay. But it really changed my mindset around money. And since then, our sales have significantly changed in the first quarter of this year. They weren't bad. They're unbelievable. So, and like, I think the two are tied. I swear. I think they're
tied. Go to Amazon.com.
Yeah.
And order your copy of Money Flows Easily to Me.
Dollars Flow Easily to Me. We'll just link it out in the show notes for you.
Yeah, but while you're doing that, you should make it a 3-4 because, I mean, certain folks have books right now.
That's right.
A New York Minute. Yeah. And also Sales Manifesto.
Yeah. People who bought Money Flows Easily to Me also bought Sales Manifesto and Sales in a New York Minute. That's what I would recommend.
That's right.
Pick up a copy of Truthful Living. You can make it a foursome. And I am happy that I'm with you today.
Oh, I'm happy.
We had a big day yesterday. I don't want to tell anybody because it wouldn't be fair to them.
Yeah.
To listen to our show.
Yeah. We'll have to surprise you later on. We can't tell you what we did.
Now, on to the interview with Pete Makaitis. Is it Makaitis or Makaitis?
Makaitis.
Pete Makaitis, who started this interview off with doing a thinking strategy session on us and will help you organize your thoughts better. Please, diehards, take a listen.
Pete Makaitis is an award-winning speaker and coach who helps professionals perform optimally at work. He delivers one-on-one thinking strategy sessions, and he's delivered them to over 700 leaders from world-class organizations like Google, FedEx, Amazon, Apple, just to name a few.
Anybody big?
Pete's also the host of the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast, Diehards. I am so glad he's here. Say hello to Pete.
Let me be the first to say, hello, Pete.
Hello.
You're in Chicago. Welcome back from the frozen tundra.
For real. Oh, man.
I don't think the weather's cold in Chicago. I think it's rude.
Oh.
Like, you go out sometimes, it's just freezing ass cold.
So the weather's rude, not the people?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, the people are nice.
Yeah. Good, good. I was like, I don't know.
The people are really nice. So, Pete, what's like a thinking strategy session? Can we go into this? What is it?
Oh, sure thing. So typically, I help folks do better thinking and communication. So often we're trying to solve a problem, figure out, should a company do this? Should they not do this? And then sort of really dig into, what are the critical factors that are necessary to be proven, to be explored, to say, yes, no. And so we could do one right now if you like.
So it's like you're taking the emotion out of it and putting in facts?
It is more of a rational, logical approach.
Okay.
I think you're selling. You are greater masters at really the channeling of desire.
Mm-hmm.
And this, like, okay, is it optimal that we buy this thing after all or not?
Yeah, let's do one.
Sure thing. Well, is there a decision that you've been mulling over or having some trouble with?
Yeah, we're thinking about getting married.
We're having trouble with that?
No.
Oh.
Actually, we've just changed to a new strategy for running the company and in productivity. We're going to the Scrum strategy where everyone meets and has to be on the same page. And I'm sure some people will buy in and some people will not.
I hear you. And so do you have a particular question or challenge associated with that, or it just kind of is what it is?
Why would they not buy in?
Why would they not buy
in? Or are you saying how to get everyone to buy in?
Yeah. How to get everyone to play same team.
There we go. Okay, so your question is, how do you get everyone to get on the same team with this? And so, all right, now that's a juicy question, and we can really dig into that. So, I'd like to get an understanding first of, when we say everyone, kind of the first stage here is just doing some clarifying questions. When we say everyone, who all is everyone?
We have a 13 or 14-person team.
Okay, 13 or 14.
Very diverse.
Mm-hmm. And when we say get on board, what do we mean by that?
Not just go through the motions of doing the Scrum activities, but be excited about it.
Mm-hmm. And help each other. Be not kumbaya, but realize when the other person needs your expertise and when to throw it in.
Mm. Well, that's good.
I feel like we're really lucky because I feel like everyone is on board. Yeah, I always wonder if this is the right scenario.
One producer just doesn't cooperate.
Hell no. No, no.
We're looking at it right now.
No, that's not the case. I don't know. We can keep going along with this, but.
Do you give strategies for teamwork?
Oh, sure thing. We could talk about that. So right now, if we're talking about decision making, I guess what I want to know is we're kind of zeroing in on making this thing a success.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So I guess I'm curious to know if we want them all to do it with gusto and to help each other, can you think of, what are the key things that must be true in order for that to happen?
It needs to be fun.
Fun.
There needs to be an accomplishment or result that they can feel proud of from it.
And agree with.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything else?
It has to be, I don't want to say easy to do, but it has to be doable.
Within the time frame. People can't feel rushed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Even though we put deadlines on everything.
All right.
And if you don't get it done in time, you're fired. So that's a whole other incentive.
I think it should feel rewarding and it should feel like an easier way to do things. Like, people need a reason for why we would be changing.
They need to feel good when it's done. They need to feel as though they were part of the process. Mm-hmm. And they need to feel as though it serves the greater good, which is the company grows and everyone is more secure.
Cool. All right. That's nice. Anything else?
No, you do that. We're great.
Okay. Very good. It's my responsibility. Okay. Well, so there you go. All right. So there was that kind of, so to recap, the first step is we clarified some questions. Hey, you know, what do we mean by, you know, having a success with the Scrum? We got 13, 14 people on board. What do they mean? What does that mean? They're doing it with gusto and they're helping each other. And then we say, well, what must be true in order for that to happen? Well, it's got to be fun. They're got to accomplish the results. They got to do it within the time frame, feel rewarded, and feel as though they're part of the process. So then the next step is, well, what must occur in order for it to be fun?
I don't know. Everyone does something that they want to do. No one's doing stuff against their will. Everyone throws an idea on the table about how to make it better. Participation?
When I meant fun, I meant like people would be enjoying what they're doing, which I think they already are, but maybe more fun. Also, we've added celebration to it. We've added celebration as one of our key themes for the year. Mm-hmm. And so what I would like to see is a lot more celebrations and reasons to celebrate.
Gotcha.
So when they get the job done, what kind of celebration should they have?
Hmm.
Is it a bunch of cupcakes or is it a $100 bonus or what?
I think it depends on how the people, each individual likes to be rewarded.
Oh, no. Well, I think you're nailing it. Well, I mean, I was just giving you, I think we might call this demonstration, you know, complete unless you want to, you know, dig all the deeper into it. But that's kind of the way it goes down. We clarify the question. What are we really talking about? What is success here? And then we get to the bottom of, okay, what must be true in order for this to be a good move or in order this to succeed? And then how could we prove that or test that or ensure that that's the case? And it seems like you're already kind of, you know, getting some cool tidbits of progress. And I'm thinking, well, I'd love to get, you know, hey, these 13, 14 people's input on board in the mix in terms of what would they consider fun? What would they consider victory?
So I love that. Let's redo this with a sales example that our diehards might be able to gain some insight from.
All right.
So I want to increase my sales this year by, I don't know, $300,000. I'm making this up, by the way.
All right. Sure thing. All right. Well, so I think what I like about that is we're already pretty darn clear. It's like, all right, we're increasing sales by $300,000. Mm-hmm. I might clarify it first of all in terms of saying, are we talking about, are we in this scenario, you're in a particular organization that has a, you know, a given set of products and services and they're not changing. We're just sort of doing the same, selling the same stuff, but more of it.
I have products and services to sell and I have a specified sales story within which I can sell it.
A specified sales story?
Territory.
Okay, I'm with you.
I might have a sales story too, but this is more about my territory.
Okay, awesome. Well, so I dig that. So the goal is to increase sales by 300,000. And then I would just kind of ask a similar set of questions in terms of, you know, what needs to happen in order for your sales to increase by 300,000?
People need to buy more.
Okay, people need to buy more. And what can you do to have people buy more?
Make more appointments.
Okay, very good. And so in making more appointments, I might ask, now, why haven't you already made that number of appointments?
Appointments are hard to make.
That would mean I would need to make more calls.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it would take more calls as opposed to an improved conversion rate on the calls, although it could go either way, and it could be both if we're looking at the
correct
numbers build up.
Correct. But I don't have time for that.
Okay. So we got to make more calls, but we don't have the time. Now, how much time would it take to make all the calls that is necessary to get this done?
4 hours.
A week?
A day. We're going to go with a day.
So 4 total hours a day of calls. All right. Well, what are you doing in your... Okay, first of all, to clarify a question. Do you work, you know, an 8-hour day or 40 hours in a week?
12-hour day.
You work a 12-hour day.
Yeah, let's say 10.
All right, a 10-hour day.
All right, so you're working a 10-hour day. And so if you're not spending 4 of those hours in the day making calls, what are you doing with your all your hours in your 10-hour day?
Well, some of those hours I make calls, and then some of those hours I'm on the calls. And then some of those hours I'm like driving to the calls or waiting for the appointments or following up on the sale.
Gotcha. And so what's tricky is, so we're kind of, you know, coaching or doing some strategic
things. By the way, I'm trying to be the really annoying salesperson right now.
You can take it. Well, so is it fair to say...
I'll vouch for that, by the way.
So, and is it fair to say that in that 10-hour window, all of your time is sales activities, or is a portion of your time on data entry, administrative, messing around, chatting with your buddies?
Yes, that is fair.
So all of your time is sales time?
No. Some of it's data entry. Sometimes I text. I don't spend that much time on social media, I don't think. But sometimes, you know, you have to check it because a customer could be there.
Okay. Well, so I'm intrigued. So if it takes 4 hours of sales calls making, and we
extra,
got some
4 hours four, extra.
Extra than above what you were already doing?
Yeah.
All right. So intriguing.
he doesn't believe me.
Well, and that's a possibility if we dig into the numbers in terms of the, you know, the conversion rates versus the time spent on the calls. But if it is, in fact, 4 hours extra, then as you can see that the process we're going down is to identify, you know, how do those 4 extra hours emerge? And so maybe it's just hustling more and working a longer day. But it sounded like we zeroed in on an opportunity when it comes to some of the social media, some of the data entry, some of the texting. And maybe some of the transportation even to the calls, you know, more efficient or whatnot. But that's kind of, once again, you know, the general flow of, all right, we're just going to start some clarifying questions. We're going to see what the goal truly is. We're going to see, you know, what must be true in order for this thing to happen or in order for this decision to be a wise one. And then just keep digging. And it's fascinating how when you finally land on something, it could seem like the most inconsequential of things, like, oh, I should install something on my computer that will block Facebook, right? And that can make a $300,000 sales difference for you.
Right.
Because it's what you need. It's your leverage thing.
That's pretty cool. And so what are some of the things that you've been able to help other companies identify that they need to do to increase productivity or make more sales?
Oh, sure thing. Well, you know, I think a large part of it when it comes to if we talk about kind of global issues for organizations, I think it really often boils down into unnecessary meetings and emails and sort of data things or reports, as well as unnecessary sort of analysis or, you know, exploratory efforts. And so I think that's really kind of the key is that a large portion of people's time, kind of like what your example really got to, is not spent in a truly value-added kind of a way. And so folks, there's crazy the studies in terms of, I think McKinsey put about 28% of, you know, knowledge workers' time spent on reading and responding to emails, which is nuts. And I think and many of these emails are not probably in your world, you know, juicy sales emails, but just like whatever, like, hey, blah, 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 thoughts. Or for your information, you know, this is unfolding. Hey, do you approve of this? I need an approval there. And then meetings, you know, a whole lot of folks invited just not to be rude where the input is not really critically needed and such.
And so whose job is it really to bow out of the meeting? Is it the manager's job to stop inviting, or is it the salesperson's job to say, like, no, thank you?
You know, I think it's a fantastic question. It's really both. But I think it's key that the salesperson or the individual contributor in whatever role, you know, that can be, really feel that they have the license, the authority, the courage, the sales balls, if you will, in your parlance, to kind of ask those tough questions like, hey, you know, what role did you see me playing in this meeting, or what particular input did you want from me? And a lot of times it will kind of fall apart. It's sort of like, oh, I just kind of thought you might want to be in the loop. It's like, oh, well, I'm fine sort of reading the email summarizing the meeting instead of, you know, being there for an hour. I mean, it's like, oh, okay, sounds good. I didn't want to be rude. And so it's surprising how easy and pain-free.
Blame yourself.
Yeah.
To exit.
Yeah. Oh. So, okay, you are clearly a critical thinker. People don't usually grow up and say,
I want to be a critical thinker.
I want to be a thinking strategist when I grow up and help other people think. This is such a freaking cool job. How did you get into this?
Well, you know, it's funny. Thanks for asking. And I was a weird kid. I mean, I really loved.
When did you change?
I don't know if you're saying that there's a point before I was a kid in which I was not weird.
No, I think weirdness is a blessing.
You know, I'm with you there. You got to be weird to be distinctive and get results outside the norm.
Mm-hmm. So
I'm right with you on that one. But when I was a kid, I would always, when I wanted to escape the house, ask my dad to take me to the library. And so he would oblige, you know, hey, your kid wants to read. Sure, you'll oblige. Respond to that. And so I really got into these books about success, goal setting, leadership, communication, persuasion, influence, teamwork, like that stuff. And I just like started reading these as a teenager and thought that these guys had the coolest job in terms of, you know, they speak, they coach, they consult, they write, and folks pay them to do that kind of thinking. And so I was into that at a young age. And then I found out about this industry called strategy consulting. I thought that sounded pretty interesting as a way to get some skills there fast. And I did that for about 3 years. And then I said, you know what? I want to do more of the speaking and writing and coaching, consulting on my own. So, you know, away I went. And boy, that was 10 years ago now, which is wild. And I haven't gone broke yet. So it's working out.
That's pretty cool. And how do you get in front of big companies who don't necessarily have budgets for thinking and thinking help like Apple and some of the other big ones that you've gotten into?
Well, it's really interesting in terms of, you know, thinking help. I mean, we might call it some different things.
What would you call it?
You might call it executive coaching frequently.
Aha.
In terms of, hey, I got this decision and it's tough. I need to chat with someone. Or thought partnering.
Ooh, I like that one. That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a really good one.
Very good one.
I didn't mean to downplay it. I think it's vital, and actually people don't do enough thinking. So to be able to take a step back with a thinking coach and actually get help thinking something through is incredible. But companies don't necessarily have budgets for it. And our diehards – oh, sorry.
Oh, sorry. Well, I guess you're right. They probably wouldn't have a line item that says that. But if you think about – you know, companies generally needing help with like a decision or something, you know, they'd spend money on IT. So we have more information flowing to help my decision, or they'd spend money on a consulting firm so they can sort of go to work and do some thinking on that thing for them. So it's not too much of a stretch in terms of saying, oh, okay, you know, I could see that there would be a return on putting monies in this spot.
Cool. I like that. How do you, but okay.
Do you, okay, I'm going to ask one
go
question.
Go for it.
Do you have a list of questions that you pretty much go through in order to qualify the circumstance?
To qualify the circumstance in terms of.
Well, they give you their issue.
Yeah.
And you say, well, have you done this? Have you done this? Have you done this? Have you done this?
I don't. I don't have a sort of standard wrote protocol, you know, along those lines. And sometimes, though, what's interesting is if we talk about the emotional part of things with regard to buy-in and such, it's sometimes necessary. I had someone, we won't use names, but I had someone. And
what does it rhyme with?
We'll say Steve is the name.
Okay, cool.
It rhymes with Meave. I'm worried. So let's. So Steve, we dug into some stuff about, you know, his effectiveness and what was going on, and ultimately it came down to he has a trash can that is always overflowing. And it's gross, and it's causing problems in his personal life with his friends and family. And I'm thinking, dude, just buy another trash can or take out your trash more, right?
Right. But
it's really not an effective means of driving change is to just say, here's all you got to do, and, you know, what's your problem?
Right, well, right.
As opposed to if you continually ask these questions, then Steve will come to realize, you know what? This is causing all kinds of problems in my life. And it's not that hard, like, to just make a few minutes to take out the trash more regularly, or get a nice trash can I love. So it's actually kind of fun to interact with it. Those simple human trash cans are so fancy.
I love those.
Yes.
But then you need the simple human trash bags.
I bought them and I have no regrets.
I know. They're pretty good. That's so funny.
Yeah.
So what can someone do if they want to think through their strategy better? Where do they begin?
Oh, sure thing. Well, I'd say some of the best initial questions can be like, you know, what do I really want, or what does our organization really want? And sometimes the business questions are in some ways easier. It's like, we want more sales, we want more profit, you know, we want more, you know, shareholder value.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we really want and why? On the personal side, it can be much more, you know, varied in terms of what you want. You could want things, many things beyond, you know, more money. And then why? And then from there, we try to really zero in on, well, what does it take in order to acquire that? And sometimes that answer is known, like, I just got to buckle down and do this thing. And sometimes the answer is unknown. And then that requires a little bit of research in terms of, well, what are some, who are some great teachers like Jeffrey and Jen that I can learn from to guide me and find best practices? You know, or it's about just sort of hunting down your own role models and say, hey, you've achieved this thing I want to achieve, or that we're trying to figure out. How'd you do it? What are some key things I should be thinking about and bear in mind here?
I'm Jeremy Fulkerson, and I host the Hidden Stories podcast on the Sell or Die Network. In our podcast, we share stories of seemingly everyday people that are your neighbors, community leaders, entrepreneurs, survivors, mothers, fathers, and friends, but we don't share the regular dinner talk conversations. I believe we all want to be better spouses, friends, parents, and leaders. My hope is by hearing these hidden stories, it will give you the courage to be a better you. Find me on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. There are links in the show notes to subscribe.
I'm curious, do you have time scheduled on your calendar just with yourself to think?
Oh, yeah.
And how much time do you recommend our diehards schedule with themselves to think?
You know, it's, I would say to start, it can be real tiny. And I would say make it so tiny that you feel like a tool for not doing it. That's sort of my pro tip for starting.
Like 5 minutes?
I might even say 4 minutes.
Whoa. Because
then it's like, it's less than 5 minutes. It's 4 minutes. And then just cue up a question that you find juicy. And a lot of times these questions bubble up and they feel important. But, you know, you feel like, oh, I can't think about that right now. You know, I got these other things. Or that's really stressing me out to think about that right now on top of everything else. Or I got a screaming baby or whatever kind of distraction in the mix. But I recommend if you capture the question somehow, maybe it's an email to yourself, maybe it's on a notepad or an app of choice, and then set out your time. I think, you know, 4 minutes can be huge. And personally, and there's some good science behind this, I think the morning is among the best times, you know, such that you still have a little bit of, I had one sleep doctor on my podcast call it groggy greatness. It's like you probably wouldn't be great at, you know, doing some powerlifting at that hour, but you could be great at generating a new idea because your brain is sort of halfway paralyzed, sort of like when you're in the shower or asleep.
Just to be real, I'm not good at powerlifting any hour.
Okay. But, yeah.
But
you can lift up those dogs.
I know. That all that exercise from our 20 pounders.
Adorable.
All right, cool. So what do you think prevents people from blocking that time with themselves?
Right.
Certainly. Well, in a way, it's interesting. I mean, people, I think, sometimes have a hard time blocking time for themselves for any purpose, whether it's for exercise or for meditation or for just getting enough sleep, you know, at times. So I think that's interesting in that there's many theories. I think one big force is sometimes I think we're addicted to stimulation, what's novel, what's interesting, what's new. You know, if you have a free minute, by golly, I see this on the train all the time in Chicago in terms of, you know, we're all on our phones. And it's like the modest discomfort associated with being bored is intolerable. We cannot abide it, you know, and so we're going to fill it with something interesting, whether it's a YouTube video or a news articles or a podcast or whatnot. And these things can be very enriching and worth doing. But if they sort of drown out all time and opportunity for silence and zoning out, then you're missing out on the opportunity to make all the cool connections between the news, between the podcast, between the YouTube, et cetera.
And how do you prioritize that? I think that would be the question. Do you have a system of 1, 2, 3, or by time it's going to take you to do?
You mean prioritize the thinking relative to the other stuff?
Yeah, well, like everyone has to take an action as a result of their thinking.
Right.
So how do you prioritize? Like you come up with these answers. How do you put that into action? That's what salespeople want to know. Our diehards want to know when to take action, what's the best action to take that will lead them to their sales promised land or their quota. How do I take my thinking and convert it to real-time acting?
Sure thing. Well, I think that the in-between there is this notion of, it sounds like you've got a bundle of ideas that you've generated from your thinking. And now we say, well, which one do we do and prioritize and run with? And to that extent, you know, I think that there's a few tactics I like to run with there. And revisit it over time. Because I find that often just like a first draft of writing, you know, a first idea, like, that's so brilliant. I'm so excited by that. And then you revisit it the next day. You're like, you know, that's kind of crap, actually. And so,
right.
So that's one approach, is just have a little bit of a space in between with the generating of ideas and then the questioning of them. And then you might see half of them fall out as just not being, you know, very good right there. Next up, I recommend you have some set of criteria, you know, in terms of, you know, what makes something, you know, better than another. And so sometimes I like to get a little bit quantitative and maybe dorky spreadsheet with this. If it's a sales thing, you know, you might be making wild guess assumptions on terms of the impact of doing this thing is going to have on your sales. But if you do, even your crazy wild guesses on just how much time is this thing going to take and just how much of a sales lift could this result in, can be pretty powerful in the sense that once you kind of figure out a metric or ratio such as expected incremental sales per hour invested, right? That's kind of how I think about it, a salesperson wanting to prioritize their stuff. Then you can sort of note, all right, well, I don't really know, but I'd be shocked if it were, you know, less than $50,000 of impact and shocked if it were more than $500,000 of impact. So what the heck? I'll pick a number in the middle. And once again, I'd be shocked if it took me less than 2 hours and shocked if it took me more than 20 hours. So again, I'll pick a number in the middle. And so if you do that for all of your ideas, you'll be like, holy smokes. Some of these ideas, even though they seemed equally good before I stuck them in a spreadsheet, are like 10 times better than the others. So that's another tactic you can use to prioritize, eliminate. And then you might just get good advice from folks who know, who've done it. Maybe there's even some legit studies. My favorite, I'm sure you love, Bob Cialdini, you know, in terms of all his influence equation studies, like, hey, is there any basis for this in the research? Do I know anybody or have I seen a case study where this thing worked out to be helpful? And then we got some real evidence there.
Mm-hmm.
And his basis, you know, he's persuasion. You can say whether it's dark side or bright side, positive or negatively impacted. Do you have to persuade yourself first and then try to persuade others?
You mean just to get something done?
Yeah.
To do? Oh, sure. Absolutely.
I mean, if you don't, you're kind of screwed, aren't you?
That's totally true. And
or
and
you procrastinate worse.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I'd love to get your take. How do you persuade yourself to do something when you don't feel like doing it in a moment?
I don't have a choice. If I have something to do, I love what I do. So everything that I do doesn't come with a grudge. It's a matter of what needs to be done on a priority basis. For example, we're interviewing this guy from Chicago today.
He's awesome.
Yeah, he's amazing. But we have to figure out who the hell the guy is. We have to do a little bit of research so we can wax eloquently. Yes, we've spoken before, but you talked to me about me. And now we have to talk about you.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to make sure that you get the best possible interview on the planet, and we have to speak intellectually. Those are the things I have to prepare for today and three other things. So my day's not my own, but I'm still loving what I do.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Well, so it sounds like in your case, just like, hey, there's sheer urgency necessity. And so, you know, there's no need to think or stress. It just happens because, you know, you care and it's built in.
For me, if there's something that I want to do or want to accomplish but don't want to do right now, like, for example, I want to be more fit, but I don't necessarily wake up every morning wanting, that's the key word, to work out. Right. So the thing that I think about that pushes me to get on my Peloton bike or whatever it may be is, what's the outcome I want? And is this going to help me get there?
Mm-hmm.
And if I feel like it's going to help me get there, that can help self-inspire to make it happen.
That's awesome. You know, and along those lines, with the exercise example, yeah, I think if you can also sort of reduce what some would call the activation energy associated with getting on the bike, like if you're already sort of, you wake up in the clothes you would have on for the bike. You know,
that's not going to happen.
Oh, okay.
But I would recommend that you go watch the Broadway show, The Pajama Game, and look at the Time Study Man. And the song where you...
But if you think about it... Sorry, yeah. Keep going.
No, it's all right.
Keep going.
No, I'm all right.
The song.
No, I'm fine. It's about a guy who wakes up and shaves right in bed. And the sheets get wet, and I know what a lousy shave I get, but think of the time I'll save. So you have to look at it from a standpoint of, are you really saving time, or are you being productive?
Your 9-year-old daughter likes to go to bed sometimes.
With her clothes on.
With her clothes on, so that when she wakes up, she's ready.
Right. How adorable.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so funny. But it's that same thought pattern.
That's correct. Right.
And it's funny. I think there's a couple elements. One is just like actual minutes of the clock that you save. And I think the other is sort of like the human motivational force. You know, so for example, if you like buy a bunch of fruits and vegetables from the grocery store, it will be about the same amount of time if you like cut them up first and then put them in the fridge versus if you put them in the fridge and then later cut them up.
No, you cut them up after you take them out of the fridge so they stay fresh.
Well, I guess it depends on specifically which fruits and vegetables that we're zeroing in on.
Okay.
But for me,
if I have them pre-cut and ready to go, then it's an easy snack. But if I have to go to the fridge and take them out and wash them and cut them,
that is more of the theory that I'm
I may not about. Personally. Like Jeffrey, you love preparing food for yourself. I hate it. Like, I don't hate preparing food for you. I hate preparing food for me, okay? I just don't enjoy it. And so if it's already done, like I've already washed all the veggies and cut them up, whatever, I'll go grab that as a snack instead of the chocolate bar.
Totally. If it's just as easy, that happens to me. Like if I have cashews in the bowl on top of the dishwasher right there, I will eat the cashews. If I have grapes on a bowl,
exactly,
I will eat the grapes. And that's just kind of how it goes. So shaping the environment and making it easier can be pretty huge for getting things going.
So I have one final question before you go. You have spoken to successful leaders of Fortune 500, maybe even Fortune 100 companies all over the world. And you hear their strengths and their challenges all the time. I'm curious to know, what's a common theme? Like what's a common thread of success that they all have? And what's a common challenge that they all seem to be struggling with?
Oh,
I saved the zinger for the end.
Good. I'm gonna say, when it comes to the theme, I've gotta put it in terms of, I gotta have a big bucket here, but I'm gonna call it, you know, being proactive, initiative, going and getting it, you know. So it's like they're not waiting to respond to, you know, a request, a demand, a change, a thing, but rather they are really proactively doing what they need to do to be in the position to capitalize on the opportunity. It's like they, if you looked at sort of any of the, I don't know, listicles, you know, of what successful people do, many times the habits are quite similar with regard to they have some quiet time, they do some thinking or meditation. They do some exercise. They have some emphasis on health with regard to, you know, hydration or, you know, nutrition, fruits and vegetables. They invest in their knowledge and learning. They read books and they invest in their teams and people, you know, so that they're not doing it all. They have people they can trust who are doing it for them. So these kinds of things, you know, show up again and again as themes of successful people. And I see that. And so if I had to put it in one umbrella, it would be that they are proactively, you know, seeing the need and doing these things as opposed to waiting for some urgent crisis or thing for them to do it themselves. Now, in terms of challenge, you know, I think that, again, I'll go a broad bucket and call it sort of overwhelm or too much stuff, you know, whether in terms of there are too many ideas or tasks or things that they want to chase after. It can be quite common that in any environment, and I've been thinking about this more and more, whether your computer has more windows open than your RAM can accommodate, or your cabinet has too many pieces of Tupperware than your cabinet can accommodate, or your schedule has too many appointments than it can accommodate. Whenever you get in that place of like compression, like it's a little tight, then all kinds of bad things happen from being too busy in terms of you're not thinking as creatively, you don't feel as free to make the choices and engage in some of those non-urgent proactive activities. So I think that's a common challenge that folks are always being on the lookout for, ensuring that too much doesn't come and risk swallowing them up.
So it's almost like when you're on that hamster wheel, you just keep going.
Yeah.
Rather than taking a moment to think strategically and plan and build.
Totally. And I get a real kick out of it when I have a high performer tell me no. Like, I kind of respect it. You know, it's better than being blown off. It was like, hey, Pete, thank you, but I will have no time available to do these things. Like, all right, this is a person who's clear on their priorities and is not allowing overwhelm to sneak up on them. Because like, oh, no, that sounds like a fun thing I might try out. Let me add it on top of all the other stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Does that come in 901st or 902nd?
I'm pretty bad at saying no, but I'm starting to get better at saying not right now.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. It's something I'm working on.
I concur, Jen. Well, not right now is a big thing.
Yeah.
Because then you don't like deflate the other person, but rather you're looking at it from, it is important, but I don't have the time right now to be able to really do it effectively. I like to tell people, I want to work with you when I can give you quality time and pay attention to it and do my best. And right now is not my best time to do that. Mm-hmm. And that way I'm not insulting them by saying no and actually providing hope for them that I'll get to my best and deal with them.
That's a nice one. And well, now I'm curious. I'm always learning, you know, hey, How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast. I'm always just asking people all their goodies. So tell me, when you are pretty clearly sure that you're not ever going to do that thing, how do you articulate your no? Because that's an excellent articulation of later. I want to hear the no.
I would tell people, why don't we try something else? This may not be our best collaboration.
Okay.
And I would tell them if the time comes up where it would be appropriate, I'll be sure to reach back out.
Yeah, but this
I'm
actually,
pretty straightforward. Like, I don't BS you. If, like, I don't think we're ever going to work together, I'm not going to keep you hanging. And I just, like, I don't think that's fair.
Right.
You know,
that's
for them.
And you have to let them down gently. You
right.
Can't
I don't want to be a number in their pipeline.
Oh, right. Well, and they're gonna hit you back, you know, 7 more times.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I'd rather just say that this is not on my priorities right now. And, you know, what you're doing seems great, but not a great fit for me. And if circumstance changes, I'll be sure to reach back out. So then this way I'm putting it on me to reach back out to that person rather than like, don't keep contacting me.
I don't need
that 90th follow up. Thank you.
I try to let the other person keep their dignity and I just say, this idea fucking blows. And that way they.
How dignified.
Oh boy.
Well, what's fun is when you see these phrases and scripts are so good. That gets me thinking of a tool that I love. It's called Text Expander, which lets you do a little shortcut.
Yes, I love that. Yes, it's so key.
That exact sentence in or two in your email for bloop, bloop. You can launch that, you know, dozens of times in a week.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Well, hey, this has been great. We're going to put your podcast into the show notes, How to Be Awesome at Your Job. And where should people go to find out more information? Is it PeteMacitis.com?
Well, that'll link you over to awesomeatyourjob.com, which is kind of the key for everything.
But, okay.
Any podcast app, I'd say, sometimes Apple Podcasts will even autocomplete. If you say how to be, it'll be like, awesome at your job. Like, well, yes, thank you, Apple Podcasts.
Cool.
I love that. Yeah. That's pretty awesome.
So, Jen, this guy's an organized guy.
Yeah, and he's a thinker.
But I'm a disorganized guy and a thinker. Mm. So I need to have somebody talk to me about disorganization and why it's okay and how to think a little bit clearer while still being disorganized. Because you can tell he's like a fastidious person, and I'm not fastidious.
I think that's why people hire him.
Oh, to get fastidious?
Well, also to get more thinking organized.
Well, my closet's clean. My sock drawer's clean. All the pairs are paired. But that's not how I live my life. By the way.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though, Jeffrey. Everybody, again, some folks, if they can afford it, hire maids, right? So basically, people hire him.
They don't call him maids. They call him housekeepers.
Housekeepers. But you get exactly where I'm going with this, though.
This is important.
He helps organize.
I lost my ears. I stepped on my ears.
He unplugged the headphones. IRL. This is real life.
Can you hear me anyway?
I can hear you perfectly.
Yeah, we can hear you. You just can't hear yourself.
I just can't hear you back. Lips are moving, but he ain't saying nothing.
That's right. All right. So Nada's talking about cleaning.
Yeah, so...
Wait, let him finish.
Oh.
But basically what I was going to is you hire maids to help organize... Housekeepers, I'm sorry. You hire your housekeeper to help organize every now and again to help you out and keep things organized. So basically Pete's the same type of guy. He'll come in, he'll help you organize. Things will get messy, but then he'll come back and help clean it up.
So he's a business housekeeper?
Yes, he is.
That's pretty interesting. That's
He's not just I think he takes it a step further than that, though, because the housekeeper, you know, puts it back together again, essentially, and maybe hopefully makes it cleaner than it was before he or she arrived. But what Pete does is he then helps you take that new foundation to grow to an even higher level.
Let me put it to you this way. You're a diehard, you're a salesperson, you have a desk. Your desk is clean. But in a week, it looks like a shithole because you put down this and you put this paper down, you put this book down.
Looking in the studio right now?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
All of a sudden, your desk is a mess. And then you have to clean up. Well, what this guy does, and he's pretty good at it. Pete questions how much of a slob you really are. Not just from a standpoint of your personal organization, but of your thinking. He's challenging your thought process organization, and it manifests itself on your desk.
So I'm going to add one more thing, then let's get off this analogy.
All right.
Pete takes the clutter out of whatever's going on, because when there's clutter in your brain, you cannot think clearly. And so he removes the clutter and then helps you set a new focus or foundation based on what is possible. And I think the interesting thing that I realized by having him do the thinking strategy on us was just how many questions he asked. And they weren't really like assumptive questions. They were just questions that would allow us to answer in a way that could bring the session forward and bring the thinking forward. And so it's the same thing when you're on a sales call, because you need to be asking your prospects similar questions to help them find their own answers, but their answer being you. And so he already sometimes knows the answer, I think, ahead of time of what the person needs to do, because he's done this so many times. And what he's doing is he's helping you draw your own conclusion, helping you create your own story.
It's also the questions that he asks brings clarity to him about mm-hmm. what your situation is.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you a question that I wanted to be asked, but I was not.
Okay.
Jen?
Yes, Jeffrey?
How do you remove your clutter?
I try to remove it as it comes up, like immediately.
No, no,
I don't
no,
like
Jen.
Clutter.
That's a bullshit answer. How do you remove your clutter mentally?
Oh, my mental clutter.
Physically?
My mental clutter. I thought you meant my physical papers.
That's what this whole interview is based on.
Mm-hmm.
How do you remove the clutter so that you have greater opportunity to let ideas flow through you and that your mindset is clear? Or that your mindfulness is clear so that your mindset can take over.
Let's talk about that.
You're making
a distinction between – okay. You want me to answer your question?
Yeah.
I have self-care. Like I have Headspace. I love Headspace.
Hi, I'm Andy. I'm here to put you to sleep.
You hate Andy.
Yeah, right.
But you know what? I love Andy, and he creates space, literally space in my head by me doing a 10-minute meditation.
If you're a diehard and you think Andy's full of shit, would you please send me an email so that I can give it to Jen?
Andy cannot be full of shit. There are millions of people who use Headspace and love it as much as I do.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, honestly, though, what Jen does is no different from what you have done for years. At 5 in the morning.
Correct.
I've heard you do every interview, because usually I'm here when you do these.
Right.
But every morning, do you not get up, you read, you write, you think, you create? Correct.
Right. But I declutter my mind before I go to bed. I have lists of things, even if I don't do them. I have a solid list of everything I have to do. You know I have a spreadsheet with every project I've got. You know I have a to-do list that goes a mile long. But I can go to sleep and I'm not worried about what I have to do tomorrow. I'm mm-hmm. not worried about forgetting.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in the declutter zone before I go to bed, and then I'm in the mindful mindset zone when I wake up.
Yeah.
And that works.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a matter of having everything neat and tidy. If you look around my desk, I can't even sit down there. If you look around the floor of the chair that I sit in, make sure you don't trip.
See, but for me, that would drive me crazy. Like, I cannot work in a workspace that is full of clutter. I have to have a clean space because it affects my mindset.
That's so why I have that cluttery space, so you'll stay the hell out of my space.
So
don't
you
tell
do
anybody,
you.
Please.
So you do you, and I'll do me, right?
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like diehards, you need to find what works for you specifically, what kind of space works for you best so that you can sit down and think. Because the thing that we sort of glossed over is that everyone needs to create dedicated think time. And I love that Pete said start
with – in a comfortable place.
Yes. And I love that Pete said start with 4 minutes. Like, whoa, I would have thought you should start with like 20 minutes. Okay. What are you going to accomplish in 4 minutes? What can you think about in 4 minutes? But you know what?
It's a start.
For someone who is not setting dedicated think time right now, 4 minutes might be like an eternity to you. So, like, what are you waiting for?
It's worse than waiting for an Uber.
Pause this.
It tells you it's going to be 4 minutes, but the bastard really shows up in 8 because he hits a traffic light.
That's right. That's horrible. So, pause the podcast for 4 minutes. Set your timer and just think.
Yeah.
What's bothering you right now, or what's exciting for you right now? What's top of mind right now? Take 4 minutes to think about it.
Let me throw something else at you. When you're listening to something that's informative, like an Earl Nightingale old CD or tape or whatever you have, just go on YouTube, look for Direct Line and listen to one of those one of those recordings. It's about 30 minutes long. You have to pause it because there's so much information being thrown at you. Did you ever, like, you dwell on a thought and you're already 5 more minutes into it and you didn't realize that you hadn't listened to the last 3 paragraphs and you go, oh, wait, I got to go back, because you were dwelling on a thought. And what this guy was saying, what Pete was saying was, stop what you're doing, let the thought go all the way through you, capture what it is that you're trying to capture, then go to the next thought,
mm-hmm.
or then go to the next thing. And that creates the pattern of organization, and that's what everybody needs, me and you included.
For sure. All right, on that note, we got to jump.
Where?
Off the episode.
Oh.
But we have our best of show coming up on Friday,
mm-hmm.
filled with the best parts of our interviews. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, and we'll see you on Monday for Motivation Monday.
I am not begging for you to go out and buy the Sales Manifesto, nor am I, or is Jen, begging you to buy the Sales in a New York Minute book, but it would be nice if you did it, you know, just as a kind of a...
Listen, we put all this free content out there every day to help you. And if you could do one thing to support us.
We give everything for nothing. We give you our best of our best.
If you could do one thing to support us and our publisher, Dave.
Yeah.
Please go buy our books, Sales in a New York Minute and Sales Manifesto.
Until
next time.
Might not get
I'm Jen Glickow.
We need it.
Until next time, I'm Jen Glickow.
Oh, I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. And I'm challenging you to get out there, buy books, and go make a sale, even if your ass falls off.
Sell or Die Hard. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that... Tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true sell or diehard. And we thank you.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit sellordienetwork.com.